characterized essentially this kind of investor action around the world. And right now, the World Bank notes that there are about 100 companies that follow essentially the leadership that Paul Singer has laid out.
And his significance in national politics? 5 seconds?
He's the number one donor to the GOP.
Eric LeCompte, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Executive Director of Jubilee USA Network. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is hiring a seasoned Linux Systems Administrator. Visit democracynow.org/jobs for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fels, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sai Malkoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gesder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Liberty Jones, chief organizer for Op Cool Summer. This is a festive event to celebrate unity and solidarity in our community.
June 20th, 2014, Stories from the Streets is a groundbreaking celebration at Pioneer Square in Portland, Oregon, dedicated to exploring the life of hip-hop in the Pacific Northwest. Our mission is to raise awareness on the positive influences and lifelong benefits that hip-hop culture has had on our homeless youth and our community. All proceeds and donations from Stories from the Streets will directly benefit New Avenues for Youth Nonprofit Artist Mentorship Project. There will be graffiti, breakdancing, DJing, and rapping. Artists include Soul Miner, The Resistance, Black Butterfly, Ancient Soul, Mike Crenshaw, Lucky I Am of Living Legends, and DJ Andy Sparks. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. June 20th from 12 to 9 p.m. in Pioneer Square in downtown Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland premiere of the documentary The Bird Who Flew Alone, The Triumphs and Tragedy of Gene Clark, Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This documentary explores the life and work of Gene Clark, singer-songwriter with The Birds. It's been made with the support and involvement of Gene's family, as well as a whole host of friends and fellow musicians, not least the three surviving original Birds, David Crosby, Chris Hillman, and Roger McGinn. Again, that's Monday, June 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Edgefield Concerts, presenting Michael Ferranti's Soul Sign Tour, an evening of yoga and music from Michael Ferranti and Spearhead, Soja, Brett Denon, and Trevor Hall next Sunday. Tickets at edgefieldconcerts.com and Edgefield Box Office Sunday night.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It's my pleasure to have in the studio with me this morning, Liberty Jones, to discuss Op Cool Summer. Welcome to the studio, Liberty.
Hi, Joanne. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you here. And for the listening audience who I'm sure is scratching their head, Op Cool Summer, what's that about? What is this about?
Well, Op Cool Summer is like, it's short for Operation Cool Summer. It's similar to what we did in the winter time, which was a similar moniker, Op Safe Winter, where we provided warm clothes for people in the cold weather. Now it's summertime, so we're providing some gear for to make the warmer temperatures more livable. We're providing shorts, tank tops, bottled water. This event's going to be a little more festive. We're going to have some games out there and some raffles. We're going to have somebody bring a barbecue and also have some speakers and kind of an open forum for discussion on topics that are concerning anybody, any frustrations they might have, or any ideas that they want to share for future actions.
And so, so this is a community festival organized to support houseless people, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah,
but also the goal is to it's summer, it's the beginning of summer. The sun might actually be out on Sunday, right? And you've been collecting toys, dog food, items like personal care items. So for people who want to support this effort, how would they get stuff to you? I mean, are you taking collections from the public? And if so, how do they get it to you?
Well, there's a couple of ways that we get the donations and supplies that we distribute. One of the ways is going to garage sales or yard sales. People are eager to get rid of their stuff. We show up like on a Friday or Saturday, talk to the people who are running it, say, at the end, whatever is not sold, we can come and pick it up for free and haul it all away for them. We tell them that we're activists, that we're helping the unhoused folks, that we organize rallies. And there's a really positive response to that because people, they want to get involved and they don't quite know how, they realize something is amiss in our society, that there's things that problems that need to be addressed. And
so Liberty, if they're listening to us now and they want to support what you're doing on Sunday, what should they do?
Okay. Well, one very easy way to get details about what we're doing is to check out the event page on Facebook, Op Cool Summer. It's not hard to miss. It's a picture of, the picture has a dinosaur walking up on a beach, trying to make it kind of fun so it's easy to recognize. Right. That's one way. You can check the event page and get details there.
And I'll put that on my, I will put that on my website and Facebook page for Voices from the Edge when the program's over. I was actually working on that last evening, but I'll post it today.
Okay, perfect, perfect. The other thing is if people want to donate, but they can't make it on Sunday, you can always contact me. Just message me, Liberty Jones, on Facebook. Or you can message me through the event page. I've been trying to collect enough donations from people while my time is open. Schedule's getting kind of tight now, so the sooner the better. Don't wait till the last minute if you want to donate and you can't make it down there. Otherwise, if you have donations that you want to give out and you can't make it, and you can't make it for Sunday, anytime is a good time to help people. Take them down there on your own time because there's always a need that needs to be filled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think many people face the prospect of, the problem's too big, right? So one person can't make a difference. So if I don't have an organization and I don't have 100 people working with me, I just simply can't do anything. And so you're here to dispel that myth, right? That as individuals, we all can have a role in fixing this.
Oh, yeah. You should never, ever underestimate the power of one person, what one person is capable of doing. What I like to tell people is that every brick in the wall counts when you're building that wall of resistance. Every action, big or small, whether you're organizing a huge, max action in the streets, with 1,000 people, or if you're just buying soap that isn't tested on animals, every decision, every action counts, as long as it's done with kind of an ethical consciousness.
So again, this is going to start at 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 22nd. That's this upcoming Sunday. It's going to be at Elephant Park on Northwest 8th and West Burnside in downtown Portland. I come from the East Coast, so, we go through this process when you're from the East Coast that you take your winter clothes and you put them up for the summer, and then you pull out your summer clothes, and then you go through them and you figure out, what fits, what doesn't fit, what do you still like. If you've just gone through that process, because we keep hoping sun is coming, this would be a great opportunity to take those summer clothes that don't fit anymore. But also, I know sleeping bags are always needed because, people need something to lay on. Personal care products. Just think about the stuff that you already have around your house that you could part with and someone who's houseless would really appreciate. We have a caller on the line. Hello, Sunny. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is an important show. I have some items that I will bring down, and I'll try to gather up some more things.
Wonderful.
Great.
But I wanted to call in real quickly with a strong word of honor for you, Joanne. My family and I, who come across who come from across many, many Indian nations, and we are also Black Horse people. You might have heard Democracy Now this morning, that our people are winning to take off the name Redskins.
Yes,
from the Washington,
yes.
We're making headway, and that was a Black Horse, a young Black Horse woman that was talking. And we're proud of her, and we're proud of all of our young people, and we're proud of you, too, because we're lucky to have you in the community. And so we have gathered up more money. We are bringing it into you personally. The last time we brought in $800 to KBOO. I have complained about this. My family makes me kind of the spokesperson because I have a big mouth. But we brought in $800, and it was taken from us. The person that took them took our pledge money during the drive, they walked off with it. It was stolen, and we don't give up. We don't go away. And we pledged $500 to you, and we are increasing it because of this this good day, and also for your perseverance, your bravery, your strong word of freedom and justice for all people. We're increasing it to $1,000. We will bring it to you personally. We also honor Teresa because Teresa has such an engaging, interesting way of bringing also important information that helps us keep thinking. So we like both of you a lot, but we're very thankful to have you in our community. We wish you would run for governor.
Well, thank you so much. And please, when you come back, make sure you're either talking to me or you're talking to a staff person. And make them show you something that proves they're a staff person, like a business card or something. Because
I
think that's horrible that you would bring money for a purpose and it disappear.
Oh, but, we're used to these things through history, but, you know, things are getting better, bit by bit. And that young man who was speaking about every good act, it counts. It really does count. Kindness really does. And, you know, trying and effort. So he's to be commended also. But we're happy to have this moment, and now we'll return to your show. But thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you so much for calling, Sunny. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. I am talking to Liberty Jones, and we are talking about Op Cool Summer, which takes place this Sunday, June 22nd, at Elephant Park, located at Northwest 8th and West Burnside, downtown Portland. There's going to be a barbecue. There'll be community speakers. There'll be games, prizes, music. You name it, it will be happening. But it can only happen if you participate, come, show some love, bring stuff that you're not using that other people would be very appreciative to get. And then you can spend the rest of your weekend knowing that you've actually made a difference. So tell me about when you did this in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. Were you? You said it was a successful event, so that means that your outcomes were that people came, they showed up, they bought supplies, people got them.
Well, it's a really easy model to use. I mean, when you plan like a mass action rally, when this all, you know, for example, when this all started with the Million Mass March, you know, like when we were talking earlier, I had mentioned that hundreds of people are showing up at the same place at the same time,
right.
And why not just bring something?
Right.
Everybody's got something extra, whether
right.
they realize it or not, whether
that's
it's
right.
a pair of socks, whether it's a package of noodles.
That's right.
And it's also through the inspiration of Right to Dream 2 that I thought, you know, that, you know, should be recognized. And since they've done such a good job of organizing, you know, amongst themselves and making the impossible happen, you know, in a major downtown city, one of the biggest, you know, metropolitan cities on the West Coast, you know, they can have a camp right there in the middle of downtown. That's awesome. That's on the front lines, you know, that's making change and making a difference. And so I thought we should, you know, participate, you know, in that. It's not enough just to go out and have a big protest. Let's also do something. And so the response was hugely positive because we weren't asking people for money. We weren't asking for any formal declarations of belonging to any kind of group or anything. It's just it's a collective of activists, of individuals, of people who want to get involved and people who want to do something because these issues aren't going to go away. You know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask. You said Occupy kind of energized you, inspired you, just being aware of what was happening with Occupy and just the whole dynamic of that. And so I'm curious, was that your first, after Occupy went away, was that your first experience in direct action and community organizing that you decide, okay, now this is what I got to do? Or were you a community organizer prior to that experience?
Prior to the Million Mask March, I was more of a participant. Mm-hmm. And the time came for that to for the Million Mask March to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of fell into it, you know? And so I knew that we wanted to do this. We wanted to coordinate it in what was happening with other cities around our country and around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the people who knew how to do things like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one name that comes to mind, of course, is Daniel Hong, who's hugely... Mm-hmm. Helpful and influential in helping us to plan the Million Mask March, which we did in only a few weeks with about, you know, $20, you know, a couple days of flyering, and several hundred people came out. And then of course, they brought the donations. It wasn't called Op Safe Winter at the time. Mm-hmm. That moniker came just after that. And then we did it again later that month on Black Friday, you know, while everyone's out kind of shopping and being kind of like, you know, consumer zombies, mm-hmm. let's face it, you know what I mean? It's not about, you know, love. It's just about, you know, spending money and getting stuff. And it's right. just, it's these days, it's not really reflecting what our values are. And so we thought we'd basically do the opposite of that and mm-hmm. just really participate and give back and show people how easy it is to redistribute resources, how you don't have to make it about money, how there's just all this stuff already out there, how people right. don't need to go hungry, because we live in a country where $165 billion is spent every year on wasting food, you know, but, you know, they charge you so much for organic vegetables, you know, it's ridiculous, yet, right. yet all this propaganda is aimed at you to do better and eat better and spend more money, and it's just ridiculous, you know, so we need to kind of... go a different direction that's more efficient and more accessible to more people, as far as getting people what they need and also getting people involved in community actions.
Well, actually, if you want to join the conversation, I'm talking to Liberty Jones. We're talking about Op Cool Summer. That's a community event to collect and distribute supplies for unhoused people in Portland. It will be taking place on Sunday, this Sunday, June 22nd, starting at 3 p.m. at Elephant Park, located at Northwest 8th and West Burnside. What I love about these kind of events is what I hope happens is that it gives people permission to have them spread, right? So that people see you doing this on this Sunday and they're like, oh, well, that was fun, right? I could do that. And that's the goal, right? Is to get more people understanding why so many of our community members are houseless, mm-hmm. and in many cases through no fault of their own. To figure out how we can actually support people to live a productive life, I think is a very positive thing. Now, is this something that you plan? Is this an ongoing thing, or are you just kind of waiting to see where the need is before you figure out kind of what's next?
Well, we do this a lot. We've been doing this about once a month in some form or another since last November.
Mm-hmm.
And there's short-term goals and there's long-term goals. Short-term is we want to give people the supplies that they need in order to make, you know, being unhoused more livable and get people what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Also giving them hope, you know, making, you know, lifting spirits, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Feeling like you don't have to panhandle or do something criminal to get what you need. You know what I mean? You're able to relax and focus on other things. You know what I mean? You have a blanket, you don't have to worry about being cold, and then you can focus on getting housing or just feeling better. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just
mm-hmm.
That's the most important part, is having your spirits in a place of strength. Okay, and the other part of it.
Short term, right?
Yeah, that's the short term goal.
Right.
Long term goal is addressing the issues that create unhoused people in the first place. You know, there's a lot of people rallying for a higher minimum wage, so people actually live off the wages that they're earning. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people work, but they can't afford, you know, they can't afford to live off what they're making. You
right.
know, the minimum wage isn't keeping pace with inflation. You know?
Minimum wage doesn't afford you the opportunity to live within the core of the city of Portland. Mm-hmm. Can't afford to buy a house. You can't afford to live in the core of the city of Portland if you have a minimum wage job.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So a long-term goal is to kind of work on making wages more livable. Another form is to...
So when you say that, I mean, does that mean you're joining groups that, like, there's a current campaign to raise the minimum wage to 15 hours, right?
Yeah.
So you... Is that how you think you're going to join that group, or you're going to start something else?
Well, the idea is for people to see what's going on and for them to get involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't be everywhere at once. You know, I have my plate is full. Mm-hmm. I do as much as I can, and I do a lot. So the idea is to raise awareness for these issues, to paint a picture on how accessible they are and how mm-hmm. easy it is to get involved, so that people don't feel so intimidated that they mm-hmm. can, you know, run out of their office, down the stairs, into the streets, and join up with what's going on. You know, people complain about, you know, the quote-unquote homeless situation downtown, what they don't take into account, a lot of the homeless are veterans. Mm. So people are okay to send all these veterans, you know, all these people off to war. You know, when they come home, they need help. You know, there's no one there to help them. Yet people go around with all these I support the troops bumper stickers.
Right.
A lot of hypocrisy there. You know,
right.
we need to expose that, you know, in a way without telling people that they're bad, but we need to call it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the other long-term goals. It's kind of resisting a culture that kind of exploits people mm-hmm. rather than embraces people and maximizing their potential.
And so are you working with Right to Dream too? So... Ibram and his crew with this project, I mean, they're aware of it, they know about it, they're involved in some way?
Oh yeah, we know them. Yeah, okay. They're super duper people. We talk with Abraham and Brian, Jose, mm-hmm. Mark, UCARE, Humanity Hub, and there's organizations and people who are active. They're out there every day, every week doing more than I do, you know what I mean? I'm just chipping in. I'm just doing my part. Like I said, every brick in that wall counts, you know?
Well,
so we're
working
multiple fronts here.
This is a very important point, right? Because I think people think, you know, if I don't have a lot to give, whether it's money, whether it's time, whether it's information, if I don't have a lot to give, then it's not worthwhile. And that's simply not true, right? It's whatever it is, whatever within your ability to provide, because it's going to take all of us, right? And so I'm hoping that it's just like I think at the same time this is happening, there's another event that's going on that's really talking about the political landscape, right? And what needs to take place around the political landscape. And both of these conversations are going to be happening at the same time on Sunday. Your conversation and speakers and music and event is going to be happening at the same time that this dialogue is going to be taking place. And so it's my hope that at the end of the day, sometime soon, that there's so many people doing great stuff in little pockets. Love to figure out a way to get people out of the pockets and bring them all together, and at least not necessarily have to all work on the same thing, but at least to create a mosaic, a view mm-hmm. of what's happening in the community. Because I think one of the things we realize is that we don't know enough about what's already taking place on the ground when we go out and start projects.
Well, yeah, that's the idea, is to eventually connect the dots and create, you know, one big, you know, activist picture. You know, earlier this week, there was people who I don't even know who are down at City Hall, mm-hmm. you know, having to talk directly to, you know, constipated looking, you know, City Hall politicians, you know, talking about how great it is to help people.
Right.
And they're met with, obviously, with a straight face and silence and,
right.
and ambiguity. So that's another.
But we got to do that.
But
right?
It's got to be done. Somebody's got to do it. Personally,
right.
I couldn't find the articulation to sit there and tolerate that kind of nonsense, you know, because, you know, those guys are just there to get paid and they don't have the best interests of the people in mind. It's a whole elitist class. Even though they may not make as much money as one percenter, what they make up for in income, they have the power and control over people instead. You know what I mean? They're under the influence of, you know, money and campaign contributions and things like that. I mean, it sounds like a cynical thing to say, but that's just kind of the reality that we're living in, you know. And rather than blame, you know, one person or one group of people for not fixing things, I mean, obviously they're, you know, complicit, you know, with the social conditions that we're living in. It goes back to people pulling together, uniting, getting on the same page with just taking action and kind of building the community and the future that they want to live in, rather than fighting the old system. We work, you know, on building the new one.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of working to build the new one. And so is there anything that, if you think about all the stuff you've asked people to bring, are there some things that when people come for these kind of events like OpCool Summer that you thought, well, gee, if we only, if people would just bring more of this, right, this would make life easier for people who are houseless. So is there any one thing that sticks out for you that normally at the end of these sessions that you think, well, gosh, if we just had more bottled water, if we just had more toiletries, or if we just had, you know, more sleeping bags, is there any one thing that you'd want to say, you know, we really could use, this is like the number one thing we could use? I want to give you that opportunity because people are listening, and, you know, so you don't have to answer it now, but before we sign off, think about that.
Well, you have to really kind of use your imagination. You have to look around your house and just see what you have to give. I don't ask people to give anything more than they're able to. I don't ask them to spend money, you know. So you have to look. You know, people, they live outside. They're unhoused. And what would you need to make that more livable? Mm-hmm. Socks, for example. Mm-hmm. It's hot. Feet get sweaty. Don't get to do laundry often. You know, do the math. What does that mean? Right. So just bringing some new socks. It might be old to you, but they'll be new to someone else. Mm-hmm. Flip-flops, things like that, just to offer some relief and some comfort. Mm-hmm. Little things like that. Just anything that you think will make conditions a little more livable. Mm-hmm. Undergarments, non-perishable food. Mostly, it's just it's solidarity, it's spirit, it's people. That's what we need. Everybody, as long as everyone chips in, there'll be enough.
And so are you finding that there are more homeless families on the street? You talked a little bit ago about the high numbers of vets that are on the street. Mm-hmm. What's been your experience? Who are the people that you're engaging with who are living on the street right now?
All types. I've seen little kids, little kids with backpacks and their parents with backpacks in the middle of winter. Older folks, people with serious illnesses, people with cancer, people who are just trying, you know, regular people. I mean, it's not, I'm not sure what other normal people think the situation is, you know, when they think about something like this, but I've been out there and I've talked to them directly, and, it's all types. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good message, right? Because what we know is in this economy, there's a lot of people that are really close to being houseless, right? And I don't know that we do an effective job of trying to mitigate that, right? Because it's much harder to get people into housing once they've been evicted or than it is to it's to just maintain them where they are. I'm on the board of Human Solutions, and I and they have a lot of housing for low-income people in East Portland and in Gresham. And it's absolutely amazing to me just how diverse that population of people are who are trying to get into that housing. And, of course, that housing is limited as well. And we don't, you know, we've done a really good job of building some really, really expensive apartments. Just not quite sure who will be able to afford to live in those apartments now that they're popping up all over the place. So there's some challenges, definitely. But so again, on Sunday, starting at 3 p.m., Elephant Park, Northwest 6th and West Burnside. This is called OpCool Summer, and it's a festival in celebration of unity and solidarity in the community. And if you have stuff in your garage, in your house, that you think will be usable for people who are houseless, we encourage you to go to the Facebook page, which I'll have that link on my site also. Go to the Facebook page, drop Liberty a message, let them know what you're bringing so that he'll have an opportunity to figure out how this whole process will work. And so people could drop off stuff downtown as well, right? If they're in the neighborhood, they could just drop it off after 3 on Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely. They could drop it off at the park while we're conducting our event, our rally.
So anytime while you're there, they could drop stuff off?
Anytime, yeah, absolutely. And if we're not there, if you can't make it, you know, during the time, you can always just drop the stuff off at Right to Dream 2, which is on Burnside and 4th?
4th.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Right. I know it by sight, not, you know. Right. But yeah, they can always drop it off at Right to Dream too. And these actions only exist by the contributions of the collective of individuals and activists who are participating. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm going to show up and I'm going to bring enough for everybody.
Right.
You know, I am bringing a lot. I got a truckload of donations that I was able to accumulate just by simply talking to people and soliciting them, and also just picking up free boxes on the streets and things like that. You know, when people move out of their apartments, they leave a bunch of stuff behind. There's always, you know, even what might look like stuff that needs to be thrown away, but like sheets and socks and things like that is completely usable as long as you're able to recognize that. So yeah, it's, there's gonna be enough for everybody as long as everyone participates and contributes. And you know, but if you can't, that's okay too. We want just the festive atmosphere to reflect our actions, you know, because we're not trying to come up from a place of anger or frustration. You know, we're trying to come from a place of action. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I feel is really important.
And I think I appreciate what you do, because it shows the public that, you know, all you have to do is care enough to want to do something, and you can step up and do something. And I know that the folks that are houseless now are very appreciative of folks stepping in. I'm going to bring Ibram back because I need an update to find out what's happening with Right to Dream 2 and the land purchase, and whether the city is reneging again like they traditionally do when they cut deals that they think people aren't smart enough to figure out aren't good deals. And so it'll be interesting to follow that process. I also want to encourage you to keep doing what you're doing. I just think it's cool that you decided that this was going to be something that you wanted to do. I mean, because you could be doing a whole bunch of other things, right, in the summertime or in the wintertime, but you chose to do this.
It needs to be done. It has to be done, and the message has to be sent, you know, and you know, like they say, that we're the ones that we've been waiting for.
Yes.
You know, this is it's a form of protest. I mean, it's a humanitarian cause, but it's also a way of saying, you're not gonna squash my spirit or my humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, the festiveness is a way to hold a middle finger up to the oppressive and Gestapo-like tactics that are used against innocent and vulnerable people.
Yes.
And so that's the other side of it. At the Million Blanket March, which was an event that was, you know, really very popular and successful that we had in March. It was a long march and kind of protest through the city. But at the end, something happened that was really remarkable. And that's when they started barbecuing and hanging out and eating and talking. And it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that's really great. That's what a protest looked like. You know, not smashing windows, not, you know, just kind of going in circles, but actually taking action. And another opportunity with these types of events is the opportunity to network and make friends and create actions on your own. Like, don't wait for me, don't wait for someone else to create an action. It's never too late to start on your own. I started out attending protests. I mean, the first Occupy protest I went to, it was you know, the hugest one I'd been to at the time. It was F-29, and I remember clearly, you know, getting tired and being cold, and it was raining, and I didn't dress warm enough. I wanted to look cool, but I wasn't dressed warm enough, and I was getting tired, and I'm like, oh my God, like, I wanted to, like, leave. And I looked to the right of me, and I see this lady, this elderly lady with a walker in a rain suit, walking faster than me.
Yes.
I thought,
Nan.
My God, is that who it was?
That's exactly who it was.
And I thought, man, we're never going to defeat the New World Order if I can't even
get through this. That's right, if you can't keep up with that. You know, it's so funny you say that.
That's where I started.
I had that exact same experience in a march, and it was, and I don't remember if it was a anti-war march or if it was an Occupy march, but I remember clearly thinking, God, is this thing over yet? You know, gee, I'm tired. And I looked to my left, and there was a veteran without legs that had a wagon that he was pushing himself on, and on the other side was Nan with her walker. Right? And I had to do a reality check. I had to say to myself, suck it up, right?
Yeah,
you need to suck this up, right? Because you got a vet over here who, I mean, and he's on his cart, and he's just, you know, he's, and Nan is a quick elderly lady, yeah. You know? And it just made me feel like, what a wuss that you are here complaining about the fact that you're tired and it's cold. And, like, I want to go home.
Exactly.
And it's just kind of, it's as if somebody just smacked me upside the head and went, hello, wake up.
Get inspired. Yeah.
And so that did it for me. I promised myself, okay, I am not going to complain anymore about this kind of activity. And so we could certainly wrap up if you have any last things you want to say about what's coming up on Sunday. And again, you have a Facebook page. It's Op Cool Summer. So like operation, but just OP,
yeah.
Cool Summer. If you put that into your Facebook search engine, it'll pop up. It'll give you all the info you need. It lists all the many of the needs that folks have. But what's most important is you show up, smile at somebody, make eye contact. I got to tell you, what I hear from houseless people is just how invisible they feel, because those of us who are fortunate enough to have a home to go to, we don't want to make the eye contact. We don't want to show our humanity to people who we see on the street. Partly, I think, because of fear, right? But for the grace of God, that could be me, right? But we got to get over that, and we've got to figure out what's our role in actually fixing what's broken in our community. And so I want to thank you again, Liberty Jones, for the work that you're doing, and really want to appreciate the fact that, you know, you saw it, you saw a need, you stepped in, and we like that. That's a good model.
Thank you. I mean, anybody can do this. What I was trying to relate about the Occupy, you know, story, one of my first huge marches is that's kind of where I started. Mm-hmm. Just kind of trying to wimp out in some, you know, in some harsh weather, you know, mm-hmm. at a huge protest, to organizing my own events, to creating kind of a monthly kind of rally or system where we can kind of reach out to the community in an effective and efficient manner, mm-hmm. and in a model that's easy to adopt anywhere. You know, they started doing OpSafe Winter all over the country and in Europe. Huh? So it was like contagious, because they saw what we were doing, and they wanted to do it themselves. So if you can't make it to this one, let us know. If you want to make donations, you can message us at the event page. You can always message me. And otherwise, you know, it's never too late to start helping people or start taking action. You know, just try to adopt an all about action kind of attitude. Every brick in the wall counts, and there's things that need to be done. So get to it.
Yeah, right. That's right. We got work to do. That's for sure. Well, thank you again so much. And we're going to move into, I want to give you an update about what's been taking place around Portland Police and moving forward with what's going to happen with the Department of Justice. So, you can go. And so one of the things that we are waiting for, the big date is July 3rd. July 3rd is the date where the attorneys around the settlement agreement will have to report back to Judge Michael Simon. You may remember that what our goal is what Judge Simon's responsibility is to determine if the settlement agreement between the Department of Justice and the City of Portland is fair, adequate, and reasonable. And he will be making that decision sometime shortly after July 3rd, we believe. This week is the deadline for the lawyers to have their comments back into the judge, and we'll find out whether or not the judge will accept the settlement agreement. It is my belief and my hope and my dream that Judge Michael Simon will find that the settlement agreement is not fair, not adequate, and certainly not reasonable for the people who would have to live under that settlement agreement. It's also interesting to note that as per the Portland Mercury, it appears that the city of Portland is back on track. And I have to say it appears, because I haven't heard directly from City Hall. I only know what I've read in the Mercury. Thank goodness the Mercury has the opportunity to find out from City Council what's taking place, especially around the oversight for the settlement agreement. We have been for 6 months now, going through a process to hire the community oversight community liaison individual who's supposed to provide oversight on the settlement agreement. And so here's the catch-22. All these things are happening simultaneously, but yet the settlement agreement itself has not been accepted by the federal court. And so if the federal judge does not accept the settlement agreement, and what we know is Reese has already hired many people, spent millions of dollars implementing a settlement agreement that hasn't been accepted by the federal courts yet, as the public, I think once the judge says, no, we're not going to do the settlement agreement, we, the public, have to go back to the city and demand that they do better. And so whether it's going to trial, which is what the judge would direct them to do, prepare for trial, or whether it's trying to go back to the drawing board and develop a new settlement agreement, whichever it is, hopefully the community will have a much more active role in making that happen. And so I want to let you know what's coming up today on KBOO. At 9, hear Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, the guest is Iraq-American blogger and political advocate talking about the critical situation in Iraq. At 10 is Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Middle East expert Phyllis Bennis joins us for an update on the situation in Iraq. And Israel authorities arrested hundreds of Palestinians in the West Bank, including many children. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Portland-based author Jason Beam about his first novel, Southbound. The book follows a recovering gambling addict. Want to thank you once again for supporting KBOO Radio. Thank you for being a staunch listener and supporter. If you did not become a member during our last membership drive, no worries, you still can. Just go online at kboo.fm, click the tip jar, and as simple as that, you can become a member. You can join us. And so I was at a meeting last night with the Community Police Relations Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Human Rights Commission, which is tasked with working with the community and the police to identify policy changes that will fix racial profiling and other problems within Portland Police Bureau. Back when Rosie Sizer was in office, she and I co-chaired a racial profiling committee for the city of Portland that morphed into this Community Police Relations Committee. When Mayor Tom Potter was leaving office, he disbanded the racial profiling committee as he was creating the Human Rights Commission with the goal of them continuing the work. Unfortunately, the Community Police Relations Committee has not done anything, quite frankly, around the ordinance that was passed by the Portland City Council to address the issues of racial profiling by Portland Police Bureau. And because they have not, I went to the meeting last night because guess what? On their calendar was a, I'm sorry, on their agenda was a desire for them to update the committee on their work around Rosie Sizer's plan to address racial profiling. And so I went to the meeting very interested because I haven't heard anybody who has responsibility talk about the plan to address racial profiling that Rosie Sizer had developed for quite some time. And so I was very excited and very interested to go and participate in that conversation. So I went. The good news, I guess, was that there was at least 12 people who were not paid to be there that came to hear what was taking place. The bad news is I don't really believe that the committee has reviewed the original policy and compared it with what the current chief says he's doing to address racial profiling. And it certainly has not come across in the numbers as for traffic and pedestrian stops. You may remember recently a 2011 traffic stop data document was created by Portland Police Bureau, and that document showed that racial profiling continues to be a major, major problem in Portland Police Bureau. The fact that the numbers have not been released since 2011, I find really troubling, because I know Portland Police Bureau collects that data on a daily. So there's no reason why those reports have not been released, except this particular police chief clearly doesn't see the need for us to release that report. And when I reviewed it, what I found very interesting was who gets stopped and why. You might be surprised to know, or maybe you wouldn't be, that for traffic stops, for example, people who African Americans are stopped at a rate of 7% in the city of Portland by traffic officers who are looking for traffic infractions. So if you think about that, that makes perfect sense, because African Americans are about 7% of the population in the city of Portland. And so if you look at the traffic data, you think, okay, well, at least officers who are tasked with looking for traffic violations are really focused on looking for those violations. But if you look at the numbers for the gang enforcement unit as an example, let me go back. The traffic division, they don't have discretion in stops, right? Well, they have discretions in what they do after the stop, but they don't basically have discretion in stops. Their job is to go out, identify traffic infractions, and if they see one, pull you over, let you know you made a traffic infraction, give you a ticket or not, send you on your way. But the gang enforcement unit operates in a totally different way. The gang enforcement unit operates as a gang of 10, at least, at a minimum. Whenever they make a traffic stop or a pedestrian stop, whether they're stopping one person or whether they're stopping 10 people, they have the same type of response. They swoop down in the area. They're dressed as if they're headed to war, because they've got all the equipment all up and down their arms and legs. And they surround the individual or individuals that they're stopping. The data shows that they are wrong a lot, especially when it comes to African Americans who are stopped by the gang enforcement unit at a rate that's 38 times their numbers in the population. So you'd have to ask yourself, well, why would that many African Americans be stopped? And the answer to that would be is because we clearly have not done an effective job of training Portland police officers to be able to identify a gang member. This is a conversation I have regularly with Portland police officers and the mayor and the police chief. When you ask, what is a gang member? How do you, because here we are at summer again. Here we are with, we know Multnomah County's local public safety council just did a community survey, really trying to scare the daylights out of people that gangs are running rampant again in Portland, which has never been true, but certainly isn't true today. So the process, of course, is to create fear of gang activity. And then we have poorly trained gang enforcement officers who can't identify. They don't know what a gang member looks like. But they are the ones that get to label people gang members or gang impacted or gang involved or gang affiliated or whatever adjective they use to target populations in our community. And so again, so this is how that process works. So now we know Multnomah County is writing for a big federal grant around addressing this gang problem that we have here in our local community. We know that we have a police chief who has a gang enforcement unit that isn't good at being able to identify gang members. They're not good at being able to interrupt gang behavior, and they're not really good at being able to articulate what the characteristics of a gang member are if you don't include race. I've heard them try to describe what a gang member is, and when you say, well, take race out, because their assumption is that the majority of gangs in Portland are African American, are black. Black youth are involved in these gangs, but the data does not prove that out. And it's easy to label someone a gang member if you don't have to prove that you, in fact, are correct. And so what we know from the data that Portland Police Bureau collects is that they are wrong most of the time, in fact. If you're stopping people at 38 times their numbers in the community because you believe gang activity is taking place, yet your arrest numbers don't reflect that you are arresting this exorbitant number of gang members, then clearly there's a disconnect. And so attending the gang enforcement unit to meeting the gang the mayor's gang prevention program meetings that's run by Antoinette Edwards 2 weeks ago on Friday. As a participant in that program, I went, and I don't normally go to that program, but I went because I wanted to see how that process worked. And once I saw how that process worked, and what I saw was that police are saying, "Oh yeah, we adopted this, we adopted this case because we think it's a gang case, and we're gonna do blah 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 blah." And when I asked, "So have we developed training for police so that police are better able to identify gang members and not target people who are not involved in criminal behavior?" And I was told that they were going to get back to me on that. And it's 2 weeks later, and they haven't gotten back to me yet. But I'm going to hold my breath because I'm pretty sure they are collecting that information so that I can have it. But the reality is that if you don't train police to be able to understand the characteristics and make sure those characteristics are not race-based, then you will continue to be targeting the wrong population. We have a caller on the line. Hello, LJ. Welcome to KBOO. How are you today?
Hey, Joanne. How are you?
I am
Thank
good.
Thank you very, very much for the show.
You are welcome.
As you know, is Liberty still there?
No, Liberty left.
Oh, too bad. Because I'm with the Elders Caucus of Occupy.
Yes.
And we've been very involved in R2D2 and in supplying, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been looking for a way to coordinate our efforts with other people doing the same thing.
Ah.
So there's no...
duplication.
Right. Yeah, no duplication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yada, 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 yada. We can get them on Facebook, right?
Yes, yes, yes. If you go to Op Cool Summer.
Wait, let me write this down.
Okay, it's OP.
Wait.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Okay.
We are on the air, though, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
They don't let me just have dead air time, you know, so I got. Okay, you ready?
Op.
Cool. OP Cool Summer. All one word.
Okay.
Got it? I think that's a great idea, and that was actually what I was asking Liberty about, just how, because I knew that Occupy Elders Caucus was doing this. I think that there are a couple of other groups that do this.
Yeah.
And so it's really wonderful that so many folks are stepping up and actually helping our houseless community. I think that's fabulous.
Okay.
But you're right. It'd be so much more
Effective,
right. If we could all figure out, okay, if I do this piece and you do that piece and you do
right.
that piece and
right.
we'll all meet, and guess yeah. what? We got a lot of stuff once we meet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so just a couple of quick things.
Okay.
Can we talk about the criminalization of being houseless?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Joanne, if you accumulate a few meager possessions
right.
and it's in a shopping cart, and if you leave that shopping cart unattended for 2 seconds, all your stuff will be confiscated, thrown into a dumpster, taken God knows where, and you'll never see it again.
You know, I'm so glad you bring that up, because I've asked Portland Police, I've asked the mayor's office. So what happens to to people's stuff when you are cleaning out. When you're going and forcing people who are houseless to move, right? What happens to this stuff? They assure us that people are receipted, that they get a receipt for all their personal property, that right. they are told where they can go to get their property back. Right. But I've also heard from other folks like you, LJ, that the reality is that if it's stored, it's stored in a location that's not easily accessible for yeah. someone who doesn't have a house or a car or a bicycle or other modes of transportation to get.
Right.
Right. But, you know, they keep telling me that they have a great system. People can get their stuff back anytime they want
to. So that would mean, Joanne, that each time they confiscate, they would have to inventory all of the items?
Yes. Yes.
That do you really believe that?
No.
Do you really believe that they do that?
No, no. But they can tell you that with a straight face. That's what they tell me.
Duh.
Right,
well,
with
duh.
A straight face. Oh yeah, they can. Oh yeah, we inventory all their stuff, and I'm yeah.
Yeah, right.
So one of the things that I think would be helpful in these kind of situations, and I certainly try to do it, and I hope other people try to do it as well, is when I see this activity taking place, I bring my iPad out and I start taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I start taking pictures.
Right on.
I collect business cards from the officers that are
right
present, because you know I want a record of what I see taking place, just in case somebody comes back later and says, they didn't tell me how to get my stuff back. They didn't. I don't know what they did with my stuff. I mean, how traumatic that must be to have all your worldly possessions just in a second gone,
yeah,
right?
In the wink of an eye.
In the blink of an eye.
Believe me, citizen involvement is very, very important. I don't know if you remember. I think it was last summer or maybe two summers ago, with that incident on Shaver. Where a couple of Afro-American kids and cars were stopped
yes.
by the police, and there was a big hubbub.
Oh,
and
yes, yes.
Sudden, and all of a sudden, people were more like out on the street.
Yes, they were.
And photographing.
That was a fabulous, fabulous day. They do that out in my neighborhood nowadays, too. If people right. see a traffic stop, people come out of their apartments, their houses, they pull the cars over. It is very cool to live in my community because we've actually trained the community to keep an eye on what the police are doing. And they've
right.
been
that
doing
is so cool.
It is so cool. But we need more people doing that. It's absolutely,
absolutely.
It's amazing. All it takes is one person to stop, and then all of a sudden you got 20 people paying attention.
Yeah,
it's absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you for the show.
You are so welcome.
All right, take care. Now we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. Again, there are some really wonderful, wonderful activities happening this weekend. Op Cool Summer is taking place on Sunday, June 22nd at 3 p.m. It's hard to believe June's almost over. It's like, wow, this year is just zooming by. That's taking place this Sunday starting at 3 p.m. at Elephant Park, located at Northwest 8th and West Burnside. There's just so many activities. I was so happy to hear the hip hop announcement for their festival that's taking place really soon. This is a wonderful, wonderful time to live in Oregon, especially when the sun comes out, because it gives us an opportunity to actually rebuild community. I love Op Cool Summer's opportunity to have people come and eat, have speakers and more importantly, actually gather the supplies necessary to help houseless people be as comfortable as possible. At the end of the day, it's all of our responsibilities to help people who are in need in our community. And so whatever you can do, whatever we can do to make a difference, it will, in fact, make a difference. I know I've seen like the sparkle in people's eyes when they find out that you really are making eye contact, that you really do care what happens to them. And we as a community can do so much better than we are. But we are so grateful and so thankful for all the people who are stepping up and making a difference in our community. This is Joanne Hardesty, and I will be back next week Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Thank you, Steve. You're pretty fabulous.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. Is that all that glitter is gold? After story had never been told. So now you see the light, hey, stand up for your right.
And good morning. Thank you for listening to the Mighty Boo, KBOO Portland. 1 minute before 9 o'clock. A busy Thursday morning underway. Coming up in about a half hour at 9:30 on Fight the Empire, join us as host Per Fogring interviews Raed Jarar, Iraqi-American blogger and political advocate, about the critical situation in Iraq and the greater region. Join us at 10 as Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Middle East expert Phyllis Bennis joins us for an update on the situation in Iraq. Also, will Obama be using the same tired neocon war policies to try and quell the situation in Iraq? And Israeli authorities arrest hundreds of Palestinians in the West Bank, including many children. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones talks with Portland-based author Jason Beam about his first novel, Southbound. The book follows a recovering gambling addict. That's all coming up. Stick around. Next, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell. Today, the excuse for the latest murder fest in Iraq will rest atop an Eiffel Tower of lies. Also, what is happening to sea life on the West Coast? And more of the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around, that's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Evening with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. A night with Wisdom of the Elders takes place at the Melody Ballroom, 614 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. It includes a salmon dinner and a silent auction, as well as speeches and a cultural arts presentation. Again, that's a night with Wisdom of the Elders, Friday, June 20th at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. More information about this event may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program.